hear
people talking bad about the way we have to live here in this country. Harping on wars we fight and griping about the way things ought to be. Tonight I don't mind them switching sides and standing up for things they believe in. When they're running down my country, man, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting and falling down to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. You're running down my country, man. You're walking on the fighting side of me. The guy who claims he just don't believe you fight. And I wonder just how long the rest of us can count on being free. They love our milk and honey, but they preach about some other way of living. When they're running down my country horse, they're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far-to-die to keep. If you don't love it, leave it. Let this song I'm singing be a warning. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me. Yeah, walking on the fighting side of me. Running down the way of life, I'm fighting in a far-to-die keep. If you don't love and leave it, let this song I'm singing be warned. When you're running down my country, man, you're walking on the fighting side of me.
Yes, when you're running down my country, you're walking down the fighting side of me. And that's the name of this program here on WhiteResistanceRadio.com. Well, lots more news and views for our people. And of course, those are the European family, settler people of the Dominion of Canada, the United States of America, the Dominions of Australia, New Zealand, the Republic of South Africa, Rhodesia, and all of you who may be listening this morning in the European heartland. Well, this is Paul Fromm, and you're on the fighting side of me. Going to play the program, the ethnostate that Ken Gividen, William Johnson, the chairman of the American Freedom Party, Jason Robin, attorney in Harrison, Arkansas, and I recorded earlier this week. A few of my comments may be a little bit fuzzy because we had a bad internet connection. I'm in Argentina, or I was in Argentina at the time.
Hello everyone, this is William Johnson, Chairman of the American Freedom Party, here with another edition of The Ethnostate. With the typical guests, we've got Ken Gividen, Paul Fromm, and Jason Robb. Thank you guys for showing up. We've got Thanksgiving coming up. Sorry, Paul, I know that this is not your country's celebration, but so what are you guys doing for Thanksgiving? What are you doing, Jason?
Well, me and my family and my parents and my sister, Rachel, we're all getting together, and there'll probably be about 35, 40 of us.
Okay. You going to talk politics?
Of course. If we didn't have politics or religion to talk about, there would be nothing to talk about.
what about you, Ken?
Yeah, we're having family over at our house, extended family, for the first time since my sister passed away, so that will be kind of interesting, but we do not talk politics at our house because we are diverse. political views.
Okay.
Well,
I'm happy talking about it, but other people don't want to hear it.
So. Yeah, okay. Well, Paul, I think I've understood that you've run away from the Northern Hemisphere to escape from something. Where are you at right now?
I'm in Buenos Aires, Argentina, and it's very interesting. It's very much, in many ways, a European city. If you imagine some of the nasty places in Mexico, that's not what this is. Argentina is a very largely European population. A lot of Spanish were the original settlers, but large numbers of people came up and other European places. So it's quite a European, one has the feel of a European city than, like some of the other places I've been in Central America.
Well, it may be European in certain respects, but with regard to broadcast quality blog show, it certainly lags behind. We can hardly hear what you're saying.
It's good enough. We can make it.
Okay. All right. In any event, what you said, Paul, you said that it was largely European. It was settled by Europeans. And this just calls to mind, I was recently reading these letters by various governors to the federal government. And they seem to echo the same sentiment. The governor of Virginia and the governor of Utah and others says, hey, America's a big country. Virginia is a large state. We can take in more refugees. Send us your refugees. And I thought that's the craziest thing. Why do these governors do this? Why do they want to turn our white states into non-white cesspools? Any comments on that?
Go ahead, Kenny.
Ken?
No, I just think, I mean, I'm sure there's a lot of reasons, but I think a lot of it is because they ultimately want to show that they're not racist, and so they want to welcome their arms to everybody, every race, to show that they're not a racist person. And so they'll allow anyone in. They'll allow refugees, if you want to call them refugees. They'll allow anybody in with open arms just to demonstrate that they're not a racist person. And then I think they ultimately believe that even though they'll have non-whites coming into their states, I don't think they really believe that it's going to change anything. I think that the culture of that state will just remain the same. And so what if you have a higher population of non-whites? That's not going to change the culture of that state. And so I think they actually believe it's just going to remain the status quo.
I think Jason's largely right about the virtue signaling. We're good. I just want to make a very quick comment about Argentina. I was on a tour of the city this morning, and I went to, I forget its exact name, but it was the seat of government. It was ruled by Spain up until 1810, I think. But the local people did have a little bit of elected government. And what was interesting was you could not be a member of that council unless you were white. So it was not open to the very small black slaves population or mulattoes or anything like that. It had to be white. And that's what your dad said all the time, Jason. It was part of the constitution of all the original American states that you had to be white. I mean, it was a white man's country.
Yeah. Well, what I recall most about the Argentine is that Frank Sinatra song where he starts talking about that gal named Tangerine, where all across the bars that people are holding up their cups to Tangerine because he's such a beauty, but her art only belongs to one, her art belongs to Tangerine. Remember that song, Paul?
No, I don't. I must have missed that.
I figured you would. It's a 1940s hit. Called Tangerine from the Argentine. Do you remember that, Ken?
No, I was born in 2003.
Okay, well, anyway, getting back to the point that I wanted to make about the governors, I saw a meme recently, and it said, Western civilization, you have two choices. A, be called racist,
or B, go extinct. Go extinct. Which would it be? And then Western civilization's response was, well, go extinct, of course. You know, and so that's really, that word racist has a much bigger meaning than I ever thought it would.
By the way, if I could interrupt you, don't mean to, there is a verse in Lamentations that says, remember, O Lord, what has come upon us. Consider and behold our reproach. Our inheritance is turned to strangers, and our houses to aliens. So when your nation is taken over by aliens, that is an indication of a curse of God, according to the Bible.
Yeah. And that's the Ecclesiastes, is it?
So it's Lamentations 5.
Lamentations. Yeah. And if you go through my Bible, I got those all underlined red, every single one of them. And probably Jason's Bible, he rips out every page but those. Let's get down to the nitty-gritty. Let's talk about the issues at hand. So the very first one is USA is importing Mexico's misogynist machismo culture. What's that all about?
Is it machismo or machismo? I never knew how to pronounce that correctly.
Well, whatever it is, we scared Paul Fromm off. He left. So
I can still see him. He's just kind of frozen. But
okay.
Mexico has an increase of violence against women that results in death. That would be murder, I guess. But it has increased by 10%, according to the story. Now, what I found interesting about this is leftists are always trying to find some place to pin the tail on the donkey. In this case, the story was at Reuters. And it noticed that Mexico is a conservative Catholic country where machismo and machismo reigns and traditional concepts of gender are deeply entrenched. The implication being the reason that there is a rise in the murders of women is because of traditional Catholicism. And a couple of things came to my mind when I said that, when I saw that rather. And first of all is, okay, well, why now? I mean, it's been a Catholic nation forever. As long as Europeans have been there, since, you know, the Catholics went in and converted whomever. So this shouldn't be a little blip on a 10% jump on homicides of women, because it's always been conservative Catholic. But the other thing that came to mind is people who I know who are Catholics tend to have this mindset that the Ku Klux Klan is anti-Catholic. Never mind that there were Catholics in the Klan, they don't seem to know that. But when I read stories like this, I'm thinking, why are they not bothered by this? When they read, the Muslims are massacring Catholics in Nigeria, in France, wherever they happen to be, they don't seem to be bothered by that. And one of the stories, I don't know if it's on our list or not, but Southern Poverty Law Center listed on its hate groups, you know, its hate map of the singing nuns, I guess because they don't agree with Jewish doctrine. Where are the Catholics? Where are they not bent out of shape? But if I were a Catholic, I'd be greatly offended by this, that your conservative Catholicism is resulting in the murder of women.
Well, my question is, where does it come from in the doctrine that Catholic principles are anti-women? I mean, I didn't know that. I've never even heard that. I know that the machismo of the Latin countries are kind of very much oppressive women, but I didn't know that the Catholic Church was doing that. I mean, take a look at the Irish Catholics. I don't know that they have a reputation for beating up on their women or things like that. I don't think it's tied into religion.
Well, they expect them to cook dinner.
This item is just a crock of garbage. Machismo is basically a cultural thing in much of Latin America. It has nothing to do with the Catholic Church. The Catholic Church in Mexico, if you talk about predominantly, it's
machismo.
It's liberation theology. It's not traditionalism. There are some traditional Catholics, and I know some of them, but this person's just completely mischaracterized things. and tried to lay it all on Catholicism. Ever in a day, why would there be some rarely the machismo thing? I think that there may be something to that, and the lack of concern about Christians almost across the board for what's happening to fellow Christians in Africa and other places. It's appalling. It's not just Catholics who are being murdered by the crazed Muslims in Nigeria. It's a Protestant blacks as well.
Well, in any event, I remember talking to Jason Robb's mom about Catholicism, and she rang her hand. She said, you know, when John F. Kennedy got elected president, we thought it was going to be the end of the world. A Catholic elected as president, we could hardly stand it. I said, well, what do you think about Mormons? She says, well, I like you, Mr. Johnson.
They would not have a problem you being president.
Well, I got to go down the road. But in any event, that does, you know, I grew up the same way. I grew up saying, you know, of course, I have an affinity for Mormons because I'm a Mormon, but the Mormons, we hated Catholics. Catholics, they were the horrid abomination of the world. They were the Antichrist. And I know Jason's not in his head because that's what he was taught growing up too. Right. But because the Mormons, you know, we sprung out of a traditional anti-Catholic Protestant religion, and so I'm kind of surprised to hear that the Klan had Catholics in it. I think they probably amended Mormons before they amended Catholics. But I don't know about that. Maybe you can address that, Jason.
Well, I definitely they allowed Catholics. Obviously, Louisiana was a big part of it. But yeah.
Yeah, you guys just give in all around. You guys,
we do.
Mamby-pamby.
just have to profess to be a Christian. That's our...
Okay, all right. Well, you know. But so, Jason, what's your thought on this machismo Catholic connection?
I'm always susceptible of, you know, what's going on down there. And I don't know if I have much of an opinion on it, except that I just really question the left's approach, you know, to claiming that this so-called rise, I think that the article said like 10% for the last year or two. I'm just kind of wondering why all of a sudden they're claiming it increased that much just within the last year or two. I don't know if I even have an answer for that.
I think that the most extreme anti-feminine group of people are probably the Muslims. I mean, particularly the extreme Muslims where they make them wear sheets over their head or burqas or whatever they're called.
Right.
But I think also that you have a lot of the Asian countries, the East Asian countries, Japan and China and Korea, they're also oppressive to women. But then you get to the India and the subcontinent, that's even worse, I think. So I think basically that the machismo of the Catholics are not anywhere near as anti-women as these other countries are. What do you guys take on that?
Well, I mean, I think you're right there. I mean, I think that if you look in Mexico, you know, if you have other foreigners coming into Mexico with their own culture and tradition, like you said, Muslims coming in there, then I think that could be a reason for that. I think also it could be where they're identifying as a crime as far as violence. You know, I know sometimes when statistically they change the definition of violence, that can increase the percentage. It could be something, violence could be something as a verbal argument. Are they changing the definitions of violence down in Mexico? Maybe they are, maybe they're not, but sometimes I'm wondering if that's the reason.
But then let's take a look at the flip side of this and some of the defects that maybe Western civilizations embracing the rights of women has caused some harm to us. Because take a look what's happened to Germany under Merkel, England under Theresa May. I think our over-reliance on letting women lead also leads us down a separate path of of problems and discord.
It really is just led, I think, to the neutering of many Western males. You see that in Sweden. Where are the Swedish men to step forward and protect their women who are just being raped en masse by these Muslim invaders? I mean, where's the manly spirit? I mean, they've had this sexual equality slammed into them from probably since the Second World War. I mean, so Scandinavia, or at least Sweden, was far more advanced in this ideology than North America. We only began to catch up with them maybe in the last three or four years.
Yeah. Well, I think maybe the proper balance is that generally the man should be the head of the household, and the woman should be an help meet for him, and that they should work together, and that the wife should primarily be responsible for nurturing, and the husband should primarily be responsible for throwing the spear. So I think that maybe we need to get a balance back again.
There are a few exceptions. One, the most talented.
You've been doing two missionary.
What did he say? Something about missionary work? But
that said, Bill has been using too much missionary work. Instead of saying throwing the spear, it should be using the gun.
Okay, all right.
Dixie Lee Ray was governor of Washington State. I think she may have been the first woman governor. She died in 1994. But when she was a teenager, she changed her name to Dixie Lee because she loved Robert E. Lee. And she loved the South, so she changed her name to Dixie Lee Ray. And even though she was a Democrat, she was known for her superior intellect. This was a tremendously brilliant woman. But she also was a farmer. She owned a pig farm. And she named her pigs after fellow Democrats. So the point is, there are some exceptions, but look her up sometime. Google Dixie Lee Ray.
I remember her name. That's pretty good. I voted for her if I lived in that state. Okay, let's move on to the next story. You were talking, Kim, about how Sweden is messed up and emasculated. I think you mentioned that, Paul. So, Ken, read this next story.
Okay, the Prime Minister of Sweden denies that rising gang violence in his nation is related to the massive influx of non-white people. Do you guys want to guess what he is blaming? He's not denying that there is violence, but he's saying it's got nothing to do with immigration or invasions, I would say. Do you guys want to guess what he's blaming it on?
Global warming.
Good guess, but you probably haven't thought of that. He's blaming it on social injustice and economic disparities. If we could just make everybody equal economically, the violence would go away. It's kind of like blaming violence on Catholics. They got to blame something, or admit that they're wrong. But the point is, poverty does not cause violence. We know that because, well, Appalachia is one of the poorest parts of our nation, but yet it has one of the lowest instances of violent crime. They have a problem with moonshining, I think, but outside of that, they don't have a crime problem. We know that poverty is not a problem because, well, back in the 1930s, the entire planet, including Sweden, was beladen with extreme poverty. But crime didn't increase. All right, go before the industrial age or the technological age. Forever, people lived in abject poverty relative to how we live today, but that didn't cause people to go out and kill each other. So this is, my opinion is this. The reason that these migrants, invaders, are violent is because of genetics. I believe we can see this over and over and over again. There's a correlation between low IQ, 70s and 80s, and even into the 90s, and violence. So they're importing thousands, maybe millions, of people into Sweden who have low IQs and are prone to violent behavior. That is the problem. It's got nothing to do with
it. I think that's a portion of it, but I also think there's other components here that we're not recognizing. Basically, we have a society in all around the Western world where we've made these people feel like they're victims. And just like the Swedish president has saying that, oh, it's social inequality. It's the white people oppressing these immigrants and these non-whites that causes this. So that feeds the fuel of dissension and unrest. And when you have these children being reared by mothers who preach hatred towards the establishment white people, that also fuels the violence. So I think it's kind of a double-edged sword that really is tearing down our societies.
Yeah, I think you know, Sweden has pushed for equality in terms of economics for, you know, back I think the 30s. So it is a fairly, you know, there's not a lot of poverty nor extreme wealth in Sweden. I mean that's what's happened. So the accusation that this upsurge in violence has nothing to do with immigration, that absolutely false. Sweden's a very leveled out society. It has absolutely everything to do with immigration. And I think in addition to what you mentioned, the newcomers look upon the Swedes as weak. They're the ones that let us into their country. They're the ones who give us everything. And they also say we're victims. They're weak. And their women are there for the taking. I think that there's the explanation for.
Yeah, I think it might be true.
In Sweden.
Go ahead, Jason.
Well, and I think we're all saying the same thing, but also, you know, the fact is that, you know, like Paul was saying, is that when you have these, you know, newcomers, these non-whites coming into Sweden, they're not coming there with the idea of, oh, I'm going to try to assimilate into Sweden culture, you know, which we know that could never happen because they're not white. But even if a person wants to be liberal from that idea of, oh, they're going to come into Sweden and assimilate and take on to Sweden culture and all that, they look at it as they're coming in there to invade. They're coming in there with the mindset, I'm coming there in order to create a subculture of whatever country they're coming from, Libya or some other African country. They're coming there with the purpose of starting or continuing on that culture from the country they came from. So they're not coming there to try to assimilate. They're not coming there to say, hey, I want to be a Swedish person. They're coming there to conquer, to invade. And that's their mindset. And so when they're there, they're also looking at, like Paul said, as Swedish people being weaklings. They're going to come there and they're going to conquer. And they have that mentality, I guess you call it a herd mentality, where they're going to run in packs. And statistically, that is what is happening. That's why the crime rate in Sweden has gone through the roof, because of the fact that they have this mindset. Ultimately, they're a different culture. They're a different race, and they should not even be there because it's a clash of culture. That's ultimately what's happening.
So why are they letting them in? I think I know the reason, but what do you think, Jason?
Well, it's a population replacement. That's why they're there. They're there to destroy the European Christian Foundation. That is why they are there. They do not want Europeans to be a white nation. They are there to destroy that. That's the ultimate goal.
By the way, there was a study done in Finland, which is across the bay from Sweden. Let me see if I can find this, pull it up real quick. The study was a correlation. They studied correlation between IQ and violence. And this was published at sciencedirect.com, and this is a quote. The study found that intelligence has been found to predict a wide range of criminal and antisocial behaviors, including violent and chronic offending in Finland. So what is true in Finland must necessarily also be true in Sweden, because of very similar cultures. But add to that, from what I have understood about I think it's 83% of Muslims vote for the far left. But in addition to that, somebody told me, and I've not verified this, that they have a very high turnout rate. It's like 95% of Muslims go to the polls. Don't know if that's true or not, but it probably is. So one of the motives, like Jason said, is the displacement of the population, but these people are good voters from the left's perspective. They are the ideal people to bring in to displace culture. And because of that, I think we can see more and more of this occurring.
Well, what happens if you take a look at this Swedish social experiment before you had the influx of other peoples, whether it's from Africa, the Middle East, or even the Russians coming in? I mean, you had the Swedish experiment where they had high taxes, but education was free, college was free, healthcare was free, and so they, like you guys said, there wasn't a great deal of extreme wealth, but there wasn't any poverty, and everybody had a good salary. And if you take a look at that system, didn't it basically work for Sweden for the longest time, as long as they were one people? How did that sort out, Paul? Was that a working system back then?
Yeah, and there was something fairly similar in Denmark. I've been to both countries, and what broke that up was the change in the population. As long as it was a homogeneous population, the move toward greater, you know, balance or equality seemed to work. The society was very peaceful, progressive, industrious, and all those good things. And then you bring in this large Muslim component in Denmark, where they're fighting back really quite vociferously, and in Sweden, where it's only a smaller group that are fighting back, but that's changed everything. The violence is more so in Sweden than Denmark, but in Sweden, it's appalling in heavily Muslim areas like Malmo.
Well, see, I can understand the sentiment of the Swedes when they were one people, because like in my particular family, I have a lot of children. Some of them are on trajectories to be quite wealthy, and some of them are on a trajectory to just to be normal and middle class. And so when I have to divvy up my estate, you know, I mean, the inclination is, well, one, to either give it to them all equally, or maybe to help out the ones that aren't quite as wealthy as the others and give it a disparaging amount. And I can see, you know, if I were all one people, yeah, I'd like to help out. I like to help out my neighbor because it's the same heritage as mine, same language, same culture. And so I can understand the sentiment of the Swedes to promote their own people. But then it does not work, like you say, when you have other people coming in. And I think the Swedes haven't caught on to that yet because, well, like when the Swedes immigrated from Scandinavia to the Midwest, to Minnesota, those countries, a lot of the novels back then called them the stolid Swedes. They were hardworking, but they are kind of dense. They didn't have a lot of common sense. And I think the Swedes can be characterized that over in Sweden. They're good, hardworking, honest people, but they're stolid and they have no common sense. Although, of course, we can say that about our people because that's what we're doing in this country. But Swedes, you got to get some common sense.
By the way, the largest, the most popular political party in France at the moment, at 24%, they have a lot of parties, is the so-called, quote, far-right, unquote, political party. So a lot of Swedes are catching on. And I got to ask you, Bill, speaking of Sweden, and you're going to divvy up your inheritance someday, who gets your Koenigsegg?
Who gets my what?
Your Koenigsegg. You got a Koenigsegg, right?
A what?
Koenigsegg. A Swedish car maker, Koenigsegg, has made a Trivetta for $2.21 million. So I'm assuming you're a rich lawyer.
No.
You have one of these.
Mine is a Bugatti Veyron. I've got his and her Bugatti Veyrons. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Bill, it's lucky he's not a Swede, because if he were, he'd give his children none of his wealth to a refugee camp in Somaliland.
Well, my kids would have to wait a long time because I'm still going to be working 30 years from now. Okay, let's move on to another story. And what, you know, this is about Sacha Baron Cohen. And, you know, I think he came onto the scene when he did this some sort of movie making fun of white people pretending he was from Central Asia or something like that. But what, before we get into that story, who can tell us what this Sacha Baron Cohen is all about? Jason, you go to movies all the time. Who is this guy?
I have no idea.
Okay. All right.
What about I'm reading the article right now. I don't
okay.
know.
What about you, Ken?
His most popular character, I think, is Ali G. I don't know if that rings a bell or not. But
I thought it was Borat.
Yeah, Borat is another one. Borat is the one that you were referring to. Borat did a tour. His character, Borat, did a tour of the United States, and he would, he'd arrange meetings, interviews with different people. And they thought this guy was legit. It was this Baron Cohen, Sacha Baron Cohen, pretending to be the other guy. And it was absolutely positively hilarious. And it never occurred to me as I was watching his skits, and they are funny, I mean, they're really funny, that until I read this article, hey, wait a minute, all the people he humiliated and made fun of, and some of them were politicians, some of them were professional news people. I mean, I think one of them was Sam Donaldson he tricked, but they were all white. As far as I know, maybe there's some exception, but I never saw one that was not white. And he particularly likes zeroing in on Southern culture. I remember one of his skits, he went in to interview a guy who had a store that specialized in Southern memorabilia, like an antique store, but it was all about the South. And he went in and just trashed the store. You know, he would accidentally trip and break things. But I'm sure they wound up buying all that stuff and paying for it. But it never occurred to me. Yeah, this guy is attacking white people in the USA. Do you want to hear a bit of the article?
Well, yeah, but we'll get to that. But first of all, like, the one that I remember seeing is that he went into a bar and he sang a song, and he's a Jew, and he sang a song itself about how the Jews are just terrible people, and all of the white people in the bar nodding their heads, clapping, and all that. That is, he's making, but he's trying to show how racist Southern whites are, and one thing. And the other one that I remember seeing is he went into a gun store owner and he tried to pretend that he was some sort of, he wanted to get a gun to shoot up somebody or like that. Well, he came in and the gun store owner immediately recognized who he was, and he got up his fist, he was just going to pound that car into the ground, and Borat realized what he was, so he made a quick exit. And that was what I liked the best, because he almost got his comeuppance.
Since you mentioned Borat, now I know who everyone's talking about.
Okay. All right. So go ahead. Read a little bit of the article, Ken.
Okay. Let me get it back up on the screen here. This was in the Washington Post. And what he was doing is he was addressing the American Defense League, the ADL. He was their speaker. And apparently this just happened within the last few days. Okay, so what he said was, Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other social media platforms reach billions of people. The algorithms these platforms depend on deliberately amplify content that keeps users engaged. Stories that appeal to our baser instincts and trigger outrage and fear. That's why fake news outperforms real news on social media. Studies show that lies spread faster than truth. So what he is doing is he's saying to the ADL that streams like the one we're doing right now are evil. We got to do something about these. And you know, this show was on the ADL's hit list. I think you guys know that. One of the shows that needs to be kicked off of YouTube. All right. So, what lies?
We made the big time then.
Yeah, we're the big time. The despicable theory of great replacement, the white Christians are being deliberately replaced by Muslim immigrants. We just talked about that. But Osaka says that's not true. That's a lie. Another lie is, and this is a quote from the story, Americans will vote for president while trolls and bots perpetrate the disgusting lie of a Hispanic invasion. End of quote. So the Hispanic invasion is not happening, according to him. And if we talk about it, we're lying and we need to be kicked off YouTube. Here's one more. After years of YouTube videos calling climate change a hoax, the United States is on track a year from now to formally withdraw from the Paris Agreement. Of course, nobody believes climate change is a hoax. Everybody knows climate change is real. It has been for millions of years, unless you're a young Earth creationist. But it's there. It's real. I just don't happen to believe it's caused by humans. I think it's natural. So I would say these guys are the climate change deniers. But anyhow, all this stuff has to be kicked off YouTube and Facebook and Twitter.
Well, I remember in previous eras, you had books like Lady Chatterley's Lover was banned in Boston. And what happened? It became a number one bestseller. I remember that the Everly Brothers' Wake Up Little Susie was banned in Boston, and it became a number one hit. And that's why you have the phrase, banned in Boston, because those Irish Catholics back then were banning things right and left, and everything they banned backfired on it and became number one. Nowadays, we get banned, and it's crickets. We get off the air, and no one knows us. We go from tens of thousands of views down to 1,000 views. So I think the same results don't hold true. And so if Baron Sacha Cohen gets his way, then we will be silenced, and the benefit of social media will have lost a lot of its benefit for us.
By the way, he has a cousin who is well known as a psychiatrist. His name is Simon, same last name. But he seems to be very level-headed, doesn't seem to be a left-wing loon at all.
Who's this?
He has a cousin by the name of Simon.
Okay.
Baron Cohen.
And, Simon Cohen.
Yeah, but he seems to be very level-headed.
Yeah.
No, you know, these people like Borok, you know, when they say that there's no such, the theory of population replacement is just not true. I mean, they obviously have to say that. They're not going to agree with this. But, you know, but there's ample evidence that it's true. I mean, just look from a liberal media standpoint. In 1986, I believe, Time Magazine, the front cover of Time Magazine, I believe it was Time Magazine or Newsweek. I want to say it's Time Magazine. It has shown a flag of the American flag. And the article, the name of it was called America's Changing Colors. And it talked about America that in next 20, 30 years, America is going to eventually become a non-white country because of the massive influx of non-whites coming in. And Newsweek itself said that with all these people coming in, everything in America is going to change. Politics is going to change. The culture is going to change. The economy is going to change. Everything's going to change. And then a few years ago, when President Obama was president, I believe Newsweek, the front cover, it said the decline of white America. I believe it was the name of its headline. So the fact is that these things are changing America, massive influx. So population replacement is true. The liberals say it's true, but they're not. But these actors and these comedians that say, oh, no, these people are just naive, that there's no such thing going on. Well, their own newspapers says it's going on.
Well, the rationale is that we know that it's true, but we think that it is not a bad thing, or we think that it is a good thing, or we think that it is just evolution and just development. We come up with all sorts of excuses to justify our destruction of our own people and taking what our ancestors gave us and giving something very different to our kids, you know. So that's
very interesting line of argument. All four of us, you know, I think put a great deal of emphasis on rationality. I remember when Facebook was banning all sorts of white nationalists or groups 6 months ago, the Anti-Defamation originally put out a statement that there's all sorts of terrible stuff up there, including this conspiracy theory about population replacement. Okay, that's the party line. It's just a delusional conspiracy theory of ours. And then, in the same statement, the ADL goes on to say, well, of course, America is changing, and by, actually, they got the date more or less right, by, I think, 2041, the European founding settler people will be a minority, and they go ahead and confirm the whole thing.
Well, when I grew up, I didn't even know that Brazil nut was a nut. We didn't call it a Brazil nut. We called it a fruto. When I was in high school, Dick Gregory was a very famous black comedian, and he wrote his autobiography, and it was called, and I bought it, and I was reading it in high school, and my next door partner sitting down in physical ed class was named Michael Johnson. I was William Johnson, he was Michael Johnson, or Billy Johnson. We sat next to each other, and I was carrying this book, this autobiography by a famous black comedian. It was called, he saw that, and he came and he pushed me up against the wall, and he says, what are you reading that book for? I ended up, he was ready to beat me up, and he was a big old burly black guy, and I was a little skinny white guy. And he was pushing me up the wall, and he was the only black guy in the school, I think, but he knew me quite well because we sat next to each other. And I said, well, it's just by Dick Gregory. And he said, he didn't know who that was. So, and he's got ready to pound me up. And I had to explain that. So I realized that then that a little education is a bad thing. We taught this Michael Johnson how to read. He could read the word, but he didn't know what it meant. He didn't know the background of it. And I was still in danger. So I thought, either we educate him all the way or we don't educate him at all. That's my story.
I'd be very curious to know how they handle the play A Raisin in the Sun. Now, it was written, I think, in 55. It's about a Negro family in Chicago and the various things that they go through, and they feel they experience their discrimination. And there's quite a dramatic scene in there where the main protagonist is really at a very low point. He talks about he's just a blah blah stinking, you know. But how would you perform that play, which is very pro-black? How would you perform that without letting your actor use the words? And if you teach it, I taught it in high school, so it's about a grade 11 level of play. What would you do? Black out the words? I mean, we've gone demented.
Well, you say teen.
Do what?
You say
teen. I see.
That's
I think that the ban on that word really reflects the inherent racism of those that would ban or punish those that use it, because that means they think that the object of that word is so bad that those people are so less than the rest of us that they have to come out and protect everybody from the use of that word. I mean, if people call me a cracker, who cares? You know, people make, oh, hey, Pinky, you know, who cares? Because we have belief in our own self-worth. And these people that abandon that, they have belief that those people, the blacks, are worth less, so they have to protect them more. So it just it shows their inherent racism, I think.
And what's more, if you can't say the N-word, how do you know what it is?
Yeah.
Is it Nazi? Is it nutcase? I mean, what is this?
I thought it was Negro.
Negro. Maybe that's it.
Yeah.
I guess I'm wrong. But, you know, it's just all it is self-censorship, and we all know that. Self-censorship, it's a way for anyone, like you said, William, it's a way for victimhood status, where the blacks are the victims, and inherently white people are evil, they're the aggressors, and only white people are the ones that use those words, because if we use those words, then we're racist and bigots. blacks can say that word all the time, and it's, because to them it's not a big deal.
But I believe that there is some movement in this whole general area. I just saw something from Ann Coulter and something from Michael Savage, where they both quoted similar articles saying that the only people in the world that hate, that has a low opinion of themselves, are the liberal whites. And so, and the liberal whites are the ones that are most aggressive in stopping the use of the N-word. So what that means to me is that they are being disingenuous on all fronts. They pretend that they hate themselves, but they have to be overprotective of the blacks, so they try to protect them, so they think they have a high opinion of themselves and a lower opinion of the others, but they think, like you say, that it's virtue signaling if they demonstrate the opposite. So I think this kind of, you know, they could lie on a couch all day long and a psychiatrist could really have a heyday trying to sort out their mindset. But I think we're waking up, we're slowly going to realize that it's okay to be white.
This is a guy by the name of Silva Koshway, or Koshwal, I think it is. He was sentenced to at least 18 years in prison. After that, he may request parole. But what he did was he murdered his former girlfriend, 38-year-old Nadine Sko, who is white. So Silva is a black male. His victim is a white woman. He stabbed her 101 times, and in the course of the murder, he cut out her heart and pinned it to the wall with a knife. And reading this story, I was thinking, what is wrong with people? Why, you know, why is she spending time with this man in the first place? Why doesn't this, anybody see any problem with this? But this is not a big news story, as far as I can tell. But had the races been reversed, we'd never hear the end of it.
The other point was he's a refugee from the Sudan.
Okay, he's a migrant. Oh, excuse me, an invader.
Yeah. And she's a mud shark.
She's a mud shark.
Yeah. But in any event, it would be news if it were reversed for the same reason that a man bites dog is a newsworthy story. That is the exception, and so you report on the exception of a man biting dog. But this type of occurrence is more typical in the way that it is, and so it's not as newsworthy. It's not as sensational. And then also coupled with the fact is that the reporters don't want to report on it because they themselves will be seen as being racist for reporting it. And that word racism has a lot more destructive effect on our society than any other concept in the history of Western civilization.
So ultimately what we are doing is we are creating an alternative reality, and we are adopting that and accepting it as if it were real reality. Uh-huh. You know, I was thinking today, there was a movie made a few years ago about the Tuskegee Airmen. Can't remember. I think it was called Red Tails or something like that. I can't remember. But I went to watch the movie with some church people, and they were enthralled how wonderful these black people were in protecting our country. And it just bothered me immensely, not because it was about black heroes, but because they believe the movie. This is not history. This is something somebody wrote in Hollywood. Some screenplay writer wrote it. These are not actual footages, newsreels of people flying airplanes, fighter planes. These are scenes made in Hollywood. But they accept that as if it's reality. You know, there were cases during World War II, one in Australia, where I can't remember the name of the place, but there was a camp, American camp, can't remember what you call it, but it was dominated by black people because back then they segregated. And it was the only time during World War II where American soldiers fired on their superiors. Why don't they make a movie about that? Not going to happen. Most people don't even know it occurred. But the point being is they're creating in our minds an alternative reality. So we talk about the alt-right. Well, really, maybe the alt-right is reality, and all this other crap we're believing in is just mythology.
Well, the propaganda is so overwhelming that the only thing that you compare it to is the controlled media of communist countries, whether it's the Pravda or whether it's North Korea's organ in that regard. It boggles my mind how mainstream America just laps up this misinformation and embraces it. So slowly, slowly we're coming out of it. It might be too late, but it might still be time. Did you want to say anything on that?
You wonder. The article has a lot of quotations from members of the family, how broken up they are and so on. But you wonder about this woman, does she just have bad morals and she ended up as a mud shark?
All right, you guys. I think this has been a rewarding time. And so we'll cut it off here and we'll see you guys next week.
Yeah, what we'll do next time is we'll get Paul on the telephone. So we may not be able to see him, but we can hear him much more clearly.
Well, he'll be in Canada, I think, won't he?
Well, the next time we have this kind of difficulty.
Okay. All right. Thanks a lot, you guys.
All right. Have a good night. Take care.
All right. Bye-bye.